It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
Welcome to On the Front Porch. I'm Tamara Wallace, and I'm visiting with George Elder from Kichai, Kansas. George is part owner of Eldersley Farms in Kichai, Kansas, just north of Wichita. His business involves a diverse range of products, blackberries, you pick, farm-to-table fine dining, cheese, and wine tastings. George raises his own goats and makes goat cheese. Welcome to On the Front Porch, George.
Thanks for having me on, Tamara.
George, let's start at the beginning. Tell us about your childhood.
Sure. So, my mom's side of the family has been in Kansas since the late 1800s, and my father's side of the family is from the eastern part of the U.S., around Chattanooga, Tennessee, and St. Louis. And I was born just north of Wichita in what was the county then and what is now part of the rural extent of Kichai, Kansas, in a little community called Sunnydale in 1985. My parents had just moved to that community, and they had seven children there. We were raised on about 60 acres, grew up around livestock. My father worked in industry. And that's how I entered into that community.
George, did you have a dream job as a kid?
As a child, I wanted really to be, by the time I got to middle school and into high school, I hoped greatly to be able to use my love of the outdoors as a foundation for a potential vocation. A number of years, I considered outdoor writing, followed a number of newspaper editors and writers for Field and Stream, Garden and Gun, and outdoor magazines, and was very interested in that as a potential vocation.
Tell me about high school.
I was homeschooled until 10th grade, until 10th grade, my days were fairly flexible, where I'd have 2 to 3 hours of schoolwork, and then I'd have the rest of my day. I had a couple other young friends in the community who were also homeschooled, and we had a reasonable amount. I kind of think it was maybe shocking now that I have children, but a reasonable amount of freedom to go outdoors. We'd fish during the fall. As we got older into high school, we did a lot of hunting, waterfowl, and quail in the area, deer. And through that kind of involvement, I really developed a kind of even deeper love of the environment of Kansas. And so school was, for me, a functional part of preparation for life, but it was not the primary culture that I was immersed in. I was in close friendships and doing a lot outdoors outside of those 2 to 3 hours of school. And then when I did enter high school, it was in a small private school that was also very focused on academics and college prep and not a huge environment. There were only 8 of us in my class, so it was a very academic environment, and I still maintained close friendships and as much time outside as I could after 10th grade.
Was there any sports or other activities? I know you did a lot of hunting and fishing and outdoors.
Sure. I played the equivalent of YMCA league sports in middle school and high school. I didn't have a school team, so I wasn't involved in school sports, but played soccer and baseball. I have always been athletic, but I've never been overly a traditional kind of sports person. I think it's a great piece. My children are very involved in sports now, but that simply wasn't my focus.
Do you have any special memories from hunting, being outdoors, or from fishing?
Yeah. One of the poignant ones was that my father, before I was born, my father and mother were owners and operators of a farm around Fredonia, Kansas, and we would go back there, even though they no longer owned it, and spend mornings and days hunting quail with the family that owned that property and operated it now, after my parents had were no longer involved. And the days there would always start with these brown sugar and caramel cinnamon rolls that Mrs. Kane made, and the Canes were a Mennonite family, and they had a beautiful culture of the table. They were just a wonderful, friendly family. And I always remember driving through the dark on the highway out to Fredonia on Saturday mornings with Dad, and the smell of the cinnamon rolls and the kind of complex smells of the morning on a farm in Fredonia with cinnamon rolls, and then the barnyard and animals.
Did you have a favorite coach or teacher or mentor that maybe helped you get to where you're at today with your business?
You know, because my parents were very active in the community and had a lot of close friendships, I've been able to be a part of a lot of great relationships, friendships. I have a mentor that I meet with intentionally once a month to go through both personal as well as business things, and I think that's a really critical thing in life, especially small business, where you can feel really alone sometimes, even if you're close to your family. But some of the practical pieces or dilemmas or opportunities that you have to understand are complex and emotional moments. And so that man, his name is Steve, is very close to me now. In high school, I'd say probably one of my history teachers, who was actually a teacher at WSU, sticks out in my mind because I was taking college classes in high school. Like I said, I was really focused on the academic side. And Philip Drennan Thomas was a real gentleman and a lover of both history and literature and culture in a way that I'd not experienced before. And he had just a really capacious mind, as well as a love of Kansas and the Midwest, as he taught ancient history and wove it into kind of cultural commentary about who we are today in the 21st century in central Kansas.
So since you took classes through WSU in high school, did you end up going to WSU after high school?
I did not. I ended up at Clemson University, and that was through a couple of kind of odd connections, but my father and uncles were involved in the corrugated box industry, and they had done a fair amount of cooperation, collaboration, and continuing education for some of their staff members with Clemson University's corrugated packaging science department. And so we had contact with Clemson in South Carolina, and it was in the region where my father had grown up, in the Smoky Mountains. Mm-hmm. And that was a big adventure, long ways away. South Carolina was a totally different sort of place. Mm-hmm. And it was emotionally pretty hard for me because I was very attached to Kansas. But overall, it was a real growing experience for me relationally to uproot myself and go be a part of a very different culture, even though it's still very American. The South and the upstate of South Carolina has a very distinctly different culture of friendship, relationship, and community than I was familiar with.
Did you take history and literature classes as well out there?
Yes, I ended up majoring in history, focusing on the early American period, and studied English literature as a minor. I nearly took another minor in agronomy. I took my elective classes and spent time in the agronomy and horticulture departments because I already had an inkling that whether or not that was going to be a vocation, it was becoming more and more of an interest to me, besides literary and historic studies.
Uh-huh. Did you work in college?
I worked in the summers during college, but not while I was at university. My parents were generous to provide for my living expenses during college. I'm grateful for them for that. It allowed me time to focus on my studies and the relationships that I developed. I can see a lot of benefit in both sides. My children will probably need to work in college, and I think that'll be great. I've had lots of friends who are both ways, but I did not work during the semester, but I would work during the summers.
What did you do after college?
After college, I took a job teaching integrated literature at a private school in South Carolina, about an hour from where I had finished college, maintained relationships in that area, had a lot of the dearest friends of my life been built over the 4 years of college, and had a really dynamic relationship with that community during that year that I spent working as a teacher, as a high school. And looking back now, that was a great experience in just trying to understand and learn more about what young people are going through and how to make relevant to them some of the things that I've loved, like literature and history.
I'm Tamara Wallace talking with George Elder from Kechai, Kansas. We have learned about his growing up. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we will learn about his business, Eldersley Farm. Back on the front porch, I'm Tamara Wallace visiting with George Elder from Kechai, Kansas. We have learned about his growing up. Now we are going to learn about his business, Eldersley Farm. George, tell us how the business got started.
So the first thing to note on that is the name. Eldersley is a place name, which is my last name, and then S-L-I-E. And Eldersley is used by the Elder family in a number of places around the world where we've found ourselves. And it just means a place where the elders stayed long enough to bury their dead. And the first place we know of it is outside of Glasgow, Scotland. Eldersley is actually the community where William Wallace was born. It's really a very Scottish concept of land abiding, but it embodies a hope to live on the land in such a way that you could stay there through multiple generations and have an abiding both occupation and presence on the land. And so Eldersley was the place name that my parents used for the plot of land where we lived. And after having watched my dad through the years, I kind of fully expect to have a backhoe and a shovel when he passes and be planting him in the ground on the back 40 when he does pass. That's just how he has always related to that land and always felt very at peace with the fact that he was a part of it. And he taught that to us as children. And the business came about as I was finished with my college degree and started into teaching in South Carolina. My father sold his business and kind of became semi-retired here in Wichita. And during that time period, Dad became very interested in encouraging entrepreneurship in his children and in others in the community. He was a part of or supported entrepreneurial efforts along with my uncle wherever he could find them. And I was one of those entrepreneurial efforts. I had some thoughts about what we could do with the land that we had there and with the values I'd grown up around. And so in 2008, I moved home, finished my year teaching in South Carolina, and moved home to begin working with my dad. And the initial work that we started in on was actually to try to work at a domestic architecture that really arose from the materials available in Kansas. So we were incorporating things like an envelope out of pressed earth walls and trim work, doors and interior carpentry all done with Osage orange and red cedar and fir oak and black walnut, and ecological concepts like water looping, like gray water storage and reuse and irrigation, and concepts like composting toilets, to try to really produce a house which was viable in the suburbs and rural parts of Kansas that had more identity, that really resonated with this biotic environment, and also was more low-tech in some ways, so that the building of it could be more economical, but more highly organized in other ways, like gray water looping, to create an increased long-term ecological benefit and a more efficient housing unit than what was typical or is typical in suburban building. And that really consumed about 2 years of my time and involved travel around the country looking at concepts and some eccentric experiences, like working with a South African pressed earth builder. When we came to the end of it, we decided that while it is a really potent concept, it's not culturally or economically probably a viable business at this time in central Kansas. And it remains a huge passion for me, but we did, after the first 2 years, decide that it was not going to be a viable business to pursue. And that was the point at which we started looking at agriculture and horticulture. And the blackberries emerged slowly as the first opportunity. And we planted blackberries in 2010. And that was really the origin in 2010 of Eldersley, the business that people know today, was that planting in 2010.
If someone wanted to visit the business today, what can they expect to see or do?
So in 2011, I married Catherine Wenzel, and the Wenzel family are a longtime Caldwell family, and then Mark Wenzel is a doctor in Wichita. He's retired now, but Catherine brought to our marriage the long history of culinary culture that the Wenzel family has fostered and preserved and cherished in their family. They spent summers and a great deal of time in Europe growing up with family in northern Italy, and time in Paris, Milan, Florence. And they, after our marriage, we really started to look at involving the culinary arts in the business. I was focused on land stewardship, agriculture, and creating really high-quality local products. And Catherine was much more interested in the artistic expression of culinary art. And during our honeymoon in California, we got to see some world-class wineries and dining institutions that incorporated the farm-to-table concept and incorporated kind of out away from the city dining opportunities whose aesthetic was driven by the agriculture around it. And that was compelling, exciting to me as a farmer, to see a culture that celebrated the use of the land so highly that they would locate their fine dining overlooking it. And so we've really worked at trying to replicate that concept. And so if you come to the farm now, the first thing you see is the dairy and creamery and the little cheese shop. There's a little self-service cheese shop that's open 24/7 where people buy artisan goat cheeses and raw milk. And then a short little path takes you up to the patio where we offer seasonal al fresco dining. We're opening this Saturday, and we'll be open Saturdays through the summer and into the fall. That offers a more casual menu of breakfast items and lunch items. It's open 8 to 1. And then people come on Friday and Saturday nights for fine dining, which is a reservation-only dining, which is a prefix menu with wine pairing suggestions and a really slow artistic expression of seasonality and locality in cuisine. And those are the core pieces of the farm now, the creamery and dairy, the fine dining, and then the Bramble Cafe that is seasonal on the patio. If you come in the summer, in July, you will see the Blackberry Fairies, we call them the Berry Fairies, operating, where they will be picking up loads of 20 or 25 people and taking them over to the Blackberry Brambles all the way through the picking season, which is 2 to 3 weeks, usually starting the last week of June and going through the first 2 weeks of July. And the Blackberry picking and then visiting the Alfresco Outdoor Cafe is a staple in the community with several thousands of people joining us each year to participate in those activities. And because we've incorporated the dairy and creamery, we've been able to really pair our cheeses and dairy products as well as our gelato with that experience to offer some breadth to it and really give it authenticity.
Your wife, Catherine, she is also co-owner of the business as well. Is that correct?
She is. Yes, Catherine is a 40% owner of the business, and she directs or has purview over the culinary arts and the retail environments in the business. She's a she's one of the most remarkably creative people that I've ever met, with a really white hot, sort of passionate classical artist's temperament, where she creates at great speed, and it's really hard to keep up with her. But we balance one another because I'm very slow and plodding, and so some of the long-term pieces of developing the property and trees and landscape that's going to take multi-years is my purview, whereas seasonality and the changing menu and food has been a really ideal place for Catherine.
Do you have anybody else that helps you, or like your kids, do they get involved?
My daughter, Martha, is intimately involved in the goats. She's not full-time employed. She's in school, of course, but she is there on weekends and afternoons in the nursery and in the dairy. And my son is destined to be an engineer or a technologically interested person, and he's very interested when I'm taking apart machinery in the dairy or reworking facilities. So he comes some of the time over, but he's not interested in the day-to-day operations of the farm the way that my daughter is.
Tell us about your goat herd.
So we manage a small traditional goat herd focused on grazing and grass-based production. We manage about 45 to 60 milking does, and that dairy is there on the property. We are using about 75% of that milk to create artisan cheeses that are made there on the property. I lead our cheese program, but I rely heavily on my assistant, Jane Kill, in the cheese room, who does a lot of the day-to-day cheese making. Moving to and from the barns to graze once or twice a day, grazing for 3 to 4 hours, and then coming back to loaf. We're not a high-intensity or an industrial dairy. I've been to a lot of dairies like that that are milking 1,000 head or 5,000 head. And for me, the seasonality and the opportunities of grass-based grazing production is, in my opinion, the only reason to run a small dairy anymore, because small dairy is ideally suited to grass-based grazing management because of the flexibility of a small herd, like 50 goats, whereas once you get to 500 head, managing a grazing operation for those animals that's meaningful is logistically very difficult with goats.
I'm Tamara Wallace talking with George Elder from Kichai, Kansas. We have learned about his business, Eldersley Farm. On that note, we're going to take a short break, but we will be right back. We will learn about the blackberries he grows in his business. I'm Tamara Wallace visiting with George Elder from Kichai, Kansas. We have learned about his business, Eldersley Farm. Now we are going to find out about the blackberries he grows in his business. George, tell us about the process of growing blackberries.
So, blackberries are an intensive crop with high value per acre potential, but because in Kansas we have an adverse climate and we have a really no mature or developed horticultural knowledge of the crop in this climate, there's a lot of guesswork. So you're piecing together pieces of information that have been accumulated through many years of research or on-the-ground application in Arkansas and Oregon and Georgia, North Carolina and New York, and trying to apply it to a climate that is distinctly different than all of those areas. And so the first part of growing blackberries is a huge degree of humility in that this is a complex culture that will take many years to continue to understand. Then the second part of growing blackberries in Kansas is, I believe, a huge amount of creativity or curiosity, rather. And I say that because the small advances in the horticultural practices to make them fit in this region, in this climate, are a huge part of the journey that myself and the other blackberry growers in this state are in. There's several of us. We were able to get together at K-State this last winter, and we maintained contact with one another, and we're continuing a body of growers to learn a lot, but you really have to build a knowledge of the plant and its needs so that you can address the elements of site selection, cultivar selection, soil amendment and suitability, and fertility management to suit our climatic difficulties and opportunities, and kind of put that together into a package of what your practices will be on your farm, and then you get to order plants, which is very exciting, but it comes usually after 1 to 2 years of planning and then a field install happens, and 12 months later you have an opportunity at a small crop, and 2 years later you have your opportunity at your first mature crop.
Okay, so to produce fruit, blackberry fruit, it takes 12 months?
So the blackberries that will grow in this area are biennial. So they fruit on tissue that grows the year before. So the fruiting tissue that we will hopefully produce fruit on in 2024 grew in the spring and summer of 2023 into a cane with fruiting buds. And so the first year you plant, all you grow is vegetation. You grow a cane with leaves. That has to overwinter. And then the next year, that cane can bear fruit if you make it through the winter events and the spring events with cold temperatures. And so you're managing with a blackberry planting always the primacanes, which are the growing or vegetative canes, and the floricanes, which are the fruiting or floral canes. And if your floral canes are destroyed by cold winter temperatures or cold spring frost, you have no fruit that year, and you will have to wait until the next cycle. So you're always managing both sets of canes in a planting.
And is wind a challenge?
Wind is a great challenge because desiccation, both in the summer, desiccation or drying in the summer as well as in the winter, can reduce the productivity of the crop and reduce its vigor or healthfulness, which will decrease its opportunity or its chances of survival through the winter and the spring frost. Just as an element of stress. So all of our plantings are tucked into very narrow or tight little valleys or gaps in the trees where we have buffer from the south and north winds to create a little bit more humid environment that has a much lower than open field air speeds in the summer and in the winter.
And do you have any problems with deer or rabbits or birds?
Rabbits can easily destroy a planting in the winter. So you use either rabbit exclusion fencing, or you would have to keep dogs in the field all winter. We use exclusion fencing, and we monitor very carefully through the winter in case you get a hole in the fence or an area where they can get through. It doesn't take much at all. And once a rabbit starts chewing, they can cause thousands of dollars of damage in a few days because they only eat the bark right around the ground level. They don't eat much of the plant. They just eat the living bark tissue, but they girdle the plant, and they will destroy the floricane that will fruit the next year by that action. Deer are no real threat. They'll nibble a little bit, but...
How many blackberries does one plant produce?
So the blackberries in Kansas, on average, would probably produce about 3 to 4 pounds per plant. And that's an average of the good years and the poor years. The poor years, you can go all the way to zero or go to about a 10% of potential. And then the good years, you can get up less than 10 pounds a plant. But the real difficulty about managing the plant in Kansas is that you can go through strings of 2 or 3 years with almost no crop because of the violence of our winter temperatures and our spring frosts. And we've seen that since 2010. We've gone through 2 periods of 3 years where we've had almost no crops.
Tell us the health benefits of blackberries and why you chose to plant blackberries.
Yeah, the health benefits of blackberries are like most fruit. They are high in antioxidants like tomatoes, and grown in soil that is brought to its highest potential compared to, there's so much produce nowadays going to hydroponic production, and the soil grown plant is a different plant really overall, as far as the kind of, again, hearkening back to what I mentioned about dairy, the complexity of the antioxidant and acid profiles that are created by the complex interaction of the soil microbiome interacting with the plant roots and nutritional needs. And so the blackberry grown in soil is just really like good fruit. It's about as high in antioxidants as a tomato or any of the other superfoods that you could get. And then as to why we planted them, we looked at apples, peaches, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries. We planted a few raspberries and messed with them a little bit. We planted some strawberries and messed with them a little bit. And blackberries were interesting to me because the plant itself is so vigorous and hardy that I felt like we had some genetic material that we could work with in an adverse climate. I felt like this climate might be really hard on something like a raspberry, which was proved out in our work. And apples and peaches, there were other people in the county doing a pretty good job with those cultures, and I didn't see it necessarily as an opportunity for us. But blackberries were not something in 2010 that many people had many of. There's a few farms that are growing more of them now, not in our area, but in North Central around Smith Center there at Cortland. You've got the Depot Market, and by Kansas City, you've got Geringer's, and then in Baldwin, South Baldwin, you've got Gabe Spurgeon at South Baldwin Farms, and a few other people around the state that are growing them now. But they offered a distinctive fruit that I felt like we could market effectively, and that has proven true. When we have a good year and we have fruit, there's a good response from the community. And I think if there's one thing that small farms can't afford, it's products that require a huge amount of marketing. So you really need punchy, interesting products that the community will seek out and help you move with a low marketing budget. Otherwise, you end up mired in costs that you can't recover.
Tell us about the blackberries you pick option, when they're ready to be picked and when they're out of season. And do you get a lot of people that come to be a part of that?
So the blackberry season typically starts around June 20th. We've had it start as early as May 31st. That was the brutal hot year we had, 2012. Everybody remembers that in agriculture. And so we've had years that have started as late as July 3rd. And usually the picking season runs 2 to 3 weeks. And during the picking season, depending on our crop load, we will have anywhere from 30 or 40 people going to pick on a day. On our really low years, it'll drop below that. We'll only have picking 2 or 3 days a week. And then on our big years where we've really got a nice crop, we'll have as many as 200 or 300 people coming each day during harvest.
I'm Tamara Wallace talking with George Elder from Kechai, Kansas. We have learned about blackberries at his business, Eldersley Farm. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will learn about the farm-to-table fine dining, root-to-leaf, and bramble cafe. Back on the front porch, I'm Tamara Wallace visiting with George Elder from Kechai, Kansas. We have learned about blackberries at his business, Eldersley's Farm. Now we are going to find out about the farm-to-table fine dining. It's a root-to-leaf experience and bramble cafe. George, tell us about the root-to-leaf.
So at our farm, my wife has taken the house where I grew up. We bought it from my parents in 2015. My parents, after raising 8 children, 7 born and 1 adopted, were really ready to be done caring for a household. So when my youngest brother went to K-State, They offered the house to us, and we purchased it and in a long-term contract. And we converted the home where I grew up and was homeschooled and sat at the breakfast table into three dining rooms and a commercial kitchen. And now at Eldersley, the fine dining operates Friday and Saturday nights year-round. We do special events for companies and families and groups that are interested in seasonal and local cuisine. And that offering is a prefix dining menu, which usually has 4 to 5 courses. They're small plates prepared out of local and seasonal ingredients that are grown on farms around the Sedgwick County community. And we really seek to foster an experience of the table that is more focused on conversation, on friendship, and on conviviality than it is on, you know, looking at the menu and trying to decide things. So when you come, you'll look at the menu before you make your reservation, but then when you sit down, you're entering into an experience of the evening that's more like a familial service, and you'll go through the evening over an hour and a half or 2 hours with the wine pairings or without, and experience the winter season where you might see more alliums and potatoes and microgreens and pickled elements, and then experience the turn into spring with new potatoes and a lot of leafy greens and the early vegetables, and move into summer with the solanaceous crops, eventually corn and squash. We believe, and we just love to celebrate that seasonality and the locality, and I love to see what Catherine and her team, they have a fine culinary team, do to offer a experience around dining that is high cultural to the table, but is also distinctly Kansas.
Tell us about the other products you offer.
So outside of fine dining, we offer a more casual menu that does not require reservation on our patio. So the cafe season opens on March 23rd on Saturdays, and then it will open at the end of May for 5 days a week. And on the patio, you can enjoy things like blackberry scones, blackberry donuts, blackberry Linzer tarts, breakfast hand pies made with our cheeses, biscuits and gravy, some great savory dishes, and some rotating pastry items, depending on what the kitchen has access to, that are more accessible and a really nice seasonal way to experience Kansas in the spring and summer outdoors. We also offer our dairy products, so the cheeses and raw milk are available, but we also have a small gelato program, so we make gelato pops with blackberry sorbets, blackberry gelato, sweet creams, chocolates, and do those both in little half pints as well as the little pops, like a little cake pop that you can walk around with when you're out at the farm. So all of those are available at the farm as well.
And the outdoor cafe you mentioned, is that the Bramble Cafe?
That is the Bramble Cafe. We named it the Bramble Cafe because it centers around the high point of the cafe is the blackberry picking season. Those are the busiest 3 weeks of the year. But we offer that really starting here at the 1st of April into March, starting on the 23rd of March, because this is great patio weather. There's some cold weeks, but there's also some weeks like today where you have days that are just to die for, to be outside enjoying Kansas.
I know you had an event in February where everyone got to meet the kids, the baby goats. Do you have any special events like that coming up?
They'll be out there every day through Saturday, 9 to 12. We are offering meet the kids, so people come out with young children and play with the goats, help us bottle feed in the morning and kind of wander around the farm and enjoy the outdoors. As we get further into the spring, that program will finish up, but there will be opportunities into April for that. Our opportunities we offer are monthly cheesemaking classes for adults. We do a nice dive into fermentation and cheesemaking in the cheese room. That's really fun for people who are interested in that stuff. And then we do a take-home project with called Get Your Goat, where people will foster goats for the weekend and take home a pair of young goats from the nursery and just help us care for them. And that's a fun bottle feeding program that families have been really eager to participate in the community.
Tell us about the community-supported ag program.
So in order for small farms to exist, efficiency is going to be really key in the future. And the community-supported agricultural program is an attempt, not invented by us, but an attempt by small farms to provide an efficient way to move between the moment that food is produced and the moment it gets to the consumer. So it allows us to serve people directly from our farm with high quality products, where we ask them to commit to an amount of purchasing over a period of 20 weeks or 10 weeks. And that allows us to plan production and be more efficient in how we plan our marketing program. And in time, I really think that these models will be one of the really important ways that small farm production is consumed in communities like Wichita or like central Kansas, because it allows producers to plan, to prepare, and then to avoid huge expenditures on marketing that simply aren't affordable at small scale with a seasonal product.
Do you have any future business goals that you'd like to share with us?
Excellence. I have been humbled over the years that I've worked at Blackberries and at Goats with the subtlety. And in my 20s, I was really had that nervous itch of starting things. And I think that's appropriate to, you know, your 20s and maybe early 30s. But as I look at it now, I really believe that the rest of my life will be consumed in increasing the quality of our animal care, the excellence of our milking protocols and dairy program, including our forage and grazing programs, and the subtlety of the horticulture surrounding blackberries and fitting them really into this climate of central Kansas more and more effectively, so that we can get more and more production out of them and help them go through or weather the difficult climatic events. I think that between those two things, looking at the rest of my life, it feels pretty short, honestly. So I really don't have ambition to start new things, only to really grow better in my knowledge and understanding and abilities to execute these cultures at a high level.
George, you've done a great job creating a fun business for people that would want to come and, you know, check this out. How can they find out, you know, where you're located and ways to contact you?
So our website is a great bulletin board, eldersleyfarm.com. It has information about the current events as well as contact numbers and emails. People can go there. The Facebook page also has kind of rotating events that are happening right now, kind of some of the more immediate or current information. If we have a blackberry picking that has some openings, we'll post that to Facebook. We have a pop-up problem with weather where we have to close an event like a blackberry picking, that'll go to Facebook. So the website is the place to start, and then Facebook is a way to monitor kind of real time some of the things going on with events and all.
And Tamara Wallace here on the front porch talking with George Elder from Keachy, Kansas. We have learned about his business Eldersley Farm, where they offer a diversified range of products from blackberries to goat cheese. I have had the most pleasure speaking with George Elder. This just sounds like a fun place and a great place. If you haven't visited, you should go check it out. Thank you, George, for joining us for On the Front Porch, and to all who joined our conversation.